Hello and welcome to episode 218 of Checkpoint Chat. My name is Alessandro Barbosa and I'm joined by a cold-looking Matthew Figuera.
You set the tone for this episode because there's lots going on. So first of all, let's just be fresh out the gate. We're going to keep things tight because we've got to ship Alessandro off.
Yeah, that's places. My bad. We meant to start earlier because I have places to be this morning and then I overslept. So,
but also, you know,
also it's real dark in this room. I don't know what it I should have. Remember, I had that beautiful Elgato like light.
Yeah, and you got
that used to illuminate my face, and then I decided, oh, I don't need this thing. Well. Look at that.
You normally leave a little gap before you start the show. Not today.
There's no time for gaps.
I'm still halfway through pushing Lenska out of frame here, even though you can still see her chair. You're like, hello.
It's fine. How's she can join if she likes. Yeah, she can join the podcast. Like, yeah. No. I thought so. Yeah, exactly. It's hard work being on a podcast. It's hard work talking shit for an hour and a half.
My goodness. Yeah, next time though, let me know. I'll also dress extra smart, you know, for the podcast.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've got a collared shirt today, so it's different from my usual attire. Yeah.
Which is different from my usual attire. I usually just roll out of bed.
What, brushing your hair?
No. I'd sometimes just roll out of bed. I'm like, ugh, it looks okay. I'm going to put headphones on. Doesn't really matter. And we get going, you know? Here we are.
I mean, we are in the comfort of our own homes. We can be whoever we want to be.
I'm not wearing pants, so I don't.
Wow, that's you're right next to Lenska. So,
Lenska's like, what?
we'll be really weird if your father-in-law comes and delivers coffee to you and you just don't have pants on.
Like, what? I'm working, man. I'm podcasting. It's hard work.
So this week is kind of, I don't know. Special is the right word. I don't know. We're running a competition on the podcast for the first time, which is kind of cool.
We've been in a very long time.
Yeah, actually, you're right. Yeah, we have done this before. So, but we've been in contact with Gigabyte South Africa for quite some time. They've been asking us to kind of bestow some good hardware goods on our listeners, because I think there's a lot of people who listen who are very into their PC gaming. So we thought it would be a cool idea to kind of help you along on your build, or kind of upgrade your build if you've got one already that needs a bit of TLC. And so we're going to be give you that good. We're going to be giving away a Aorus Waterforce X240 liquid cooler for your CPU, obviously.
If you're a video viewer, you can see this beautiful RGB riddled device.
Look at that. Look at that blue and pink. Looks hot. Looks good. So, it's hot stuff. I mean, if you've been out of the water cooler game for some time, this is an AIO, so an all-in-one cooler. You don't need to build anything. You don't need to do anything fancy. But AIOs have become pretty, I would say, complex and interesting over the years. So much like the trends of the rest of the market, you've got a 240mm radiator, which comes equipped with two 120mm Aorus fans. They are RGB, addressable RGB, ARGB, so you can make them do all sorts of fun colors, like the whole rainbow wave, and you can make it a static color if you want. Nice. It's all controlled through the Aorus software, which I think is just called, I'm scrolling furiously to the name of this, RGB Fusion. That's Gigabyte's software name. So that lets you control all the colors and all the functions of the cooler. It's also got a display on the pump, which is kind of like the block that goes on top of your CPU. And this is quite common nowadays, but this one seems extra cool for a couple of reasons. So firstly, extra cool, if you know what I mean. Gigabyte has a lot of like stock configurations for this display. So you can get it to display the, you know, Aorus Eagle logo with like your CPU temperature. Or you can put up something that Gigabyte calls Chibi Time. Not entirely sure what that is, but it looks kind of cool on the website. But you've also got a complete custom mode, which means you can put custom text on there. you can put custom video files, GIFs, or JPEGs on there. And the block also has a little slot for a micro SD card so that you can load like multiple ones directly onto the pump and access them through the software if you want to do that. That's kind of cool. I think one of the coolest features of this little header is that, this little block is that it's also rotatable. So no matter what orientation you want to have the cooler in your PC, say you've got like a smaller case, like a micro ATX case or an ITX case, and that forces you to have to rotate the block in order for it to fit, you can rotate the display so that it's always upright. You won't have to like sacrifice that function. And I think that's really cool because not all coolers do that. So yeah, it's really cool. It works on all of the modern CPUs. So your Ryzen 7000 series, even with its new design, and the Intel 13 series, it's all supported by this. It's supported by pretty much every motherboard brand under the sun. You've got ARGB headers that can connect directly to any ARGB header port header on the motherboard. So you'll be able to control the RGB through those means if you don't want to do the software route either. It's a really cool cooler, you know, copper plate, which is usual. And it just looks kind of sleek. I like the round pump design. And I think 240 mils is a nice middle ground between a good water cooling performance and, you know, space saving in a medium case where maybe you don't have support for 360 millimeter coolers. So that is what we're going to be giving away with Gigabyte. It's pretty exciting. We are running a competition on gleam.io. We'll leave the link in the podcast description and the YouTube description. Mm-hmm. We're also going to be sharing the link on all of our social media channels. Yeah, Matty will be keeping an eye on those and he'll be reminding you throughout the duration of the competition, which is 2 weeks. You've got 2 weeks to enter. It's a long time.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of things you can do on the campaign to kind of increase the number of entries that you have. And at the end of that, we're just going to draw a winner and Gigabyte will send you this lovely, lovely water cooler. Unfortunately, it's only open to citizens of South Africa. This is Gigabyte South Africa, and shipping internationally is just something that not possible for us right now. So yeah. Sorry about that if that kind of like sours the mood on the competition, but I think there's a lot of local listeners who would be very keen on this. So
the listener overseas, thank you. Just flipped their table. Like,
flip their smartphone with the podcast. I hope you didn't do it while you were driving. Don't flip the steering
wheel. Oh my goodness. But yeah, thank you to Gigabyte for I think reaching out to us and, you know, being so easy to work with and willing to work with us. It's very cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it was kind of unexpected and it's really cool. And I hope we can do more of these going forward because giving away games is really cool. Giving away hardware that can play games, even cooler.
Oh,
get it cool. It's a water cooler.
Oh,
hey.
I'm glad you know a thing or two about PC hardware because this is just, I'm like, oh, wow, a CPU cooler. And you're like, oh, but you can do this and this. And like, okay.
Fun fact, the last time Matty built a PC, he bought every component and then just came to my house.
I know, it was the best.
And then sat there watching me build a PC and then somehow it didn't work.
Man, was like, you fucked up.
Yeah, I felt like I fucked up, but then we fixed it. It was okay.
No, it was a faulty CPU or something. But yeah.
Wait, was it really?
Yeah, I had to take it back to EveTech and they sorted it out.
Oh, no, you know what it was? It was one of those things where you had bought a motherboard from a prior generation and it needed the BIOS update for the new CPU.
Yeah.
But the motherboard you bought didn't have the ability to do a like BIOS flash from a flash drive. So it was like, well, we can't do anything about this.
Yellow. Well, there we go.
Not my fault. I have built many a PC that have one of the very first PCs I built for myself, like a big upgrade. I remember having so many issues with it. I firstly built it all, then it didn't work, and I sent it back, and then only realized that I'd forgot to plug in the power for the CPU like portion of the motherboard, so the CPU just had no power. No wonder it wasn't working. And then when I got it back, while I was working on it, I managed to destroy one of the pins in the CPU slot. So I had to get a new motherboard.
Yikes.
In short, don't let me build your PCs.
I was going to say, this is why I come to you, not because you mess up motherboards, but because I'm pretty sure I would do that, guaranteed.
You see, if I do that, then it's my fault.
It's like a one in 10 shot of it happening when you...
My cable management is pretty good, though. So I'll give myself that. Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. This is Checkpoint Chat. We talk about video games. Lots of video games in the hopper because while we weren't here last week, Matthew was frolicking with the Cape Tonians.
I was.
Eating that pizza, hiking.
Really flat mountain. I just want to stop talking about it.
would you know? A flat mountain and lots of liquid around.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Who would have known? Speaking of liquid, though.
Oh, wow. What a segue.
For the last couple of weeks, I've been playing a game called Dredge.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one that I've been saying that I've been playing can't talk about. But the embargo is finally up. My review's up on GameSpot.com. I gave it a 7 out of 10, would you know? This game's pretty cool, I won't lie. I've been looking at it for a while. So it's an indie game where you play as a fisherman in a boat. You never leave the boat. You literally only control the boat. So for all intents and purposes, you play as boat. Your primary goal is go out during the day, fish different types of fish, come back, sell them for profit, upgrade your ship, go out and use upgrades to catch different fish that you weren't able to catch, or move around the island a lot faster because you've got faster engines or stuff like that.
Mm.
And it's a... Uh-oh, I dropped out.
Oh, God.
My video's gone.
Oh, no, it's coming. There we go. It's because I'm trying to do this. Sorry, I'm trying to get some gameplay footage here.
That alone is a pretty interesting and fun gameplay loop. So each of the fish that you like go for, they each have a different sort of category. So if you're watching the video, you'll see the player is currently fishing for a fish in a shallow like water. You get ones that are like coastal or what is the other like normal one?
Non-coastal.
Yeah, I forgot. There's a couple of like deep normal ocean categories, and that's where you like get your normal fish, like your mackerel, your manta ray, your sharks, your stuff like that. And to fish in each of those waters, you need specific rods and reels. You can't just fish there just because. So you have to like upgrade your ship to firstly obtain those, and then also upgrade it so that your inventory allows you to carry all of them at once, because you've got a limited inventory space and an even more limited few blocks that allow you to install rods and reels on them. So you can't always have all the equipment that you want at the beginning. The inventory sort of works like Resident Evil 4, where it's like a Tetris-like board.
Very nice.
So you're constantly kind of rotating things and moving things around to make everything fit and optimized. And it's kind of fun. The weirder aspect of this game comes in when you find out that there's some like Lovecraftian Eldritch horror vibe going on with it as well. So the townsfolk at the first island that you're at, they kind of talk about they kind of allude to a fisherman before you, but they don't really say what happened to him. They don't want to talk about it. You've got this like lady in the lighthouse who's like very concerned about your well-being and telling you don't go out at night and this and that. And then you've got the fishmonger who's asking you for fish that are different. He's like, they're corrupted or like weird, and he just wants you to bring them to them. And so when you go out at night, you start discovering that some of the fish at night are real fucked up. You'll get some species of fish, normal fish, that only appear at night. So you have to go out at night to like catch them for certain quests. Because quests will be like, oh, I need this sort of fish or I need this blah, blah, blah. So you have to like, you know, change up your repertoire to fill those quest lines. But sometimes you'll catch a fish and it'll be like, oh, this is like a mackerel, but it's got three heads now.
Oh, no.
Or this is like anglerfish, but its eyes are like fucking huge, like bulging out of its head or something. So these are like corrupted fish and you don't really know where they come from. You also get to like fish in different spots like volcanic spots and hadal spots, which are like some of the deepest depths of the ocean, and you like bring up some weird ass fish from those sorts of areas as well.
Nice.
And that's like weird, and the sorts of things that people do, like when they give you quests to find like fucked up fish, they do weird things. Like the fishmonger was like, oh, I want this corrupted fish. And when you give it to him, he like disappears for 2 days and you can't sell fish to him. And when he comes back, he's all like messed up. And you're like, what are you doing? What are you doing to that fish? What is happening?
What's going on?
And that kind of like sort of weirdness permeates throughout the game. You've got this main starting island, and you've got like four distinct like hubs that you'll visit as you like chase down these five eldritch items that this collector wants you to find. He's like very adamant that you need to go find these things, and every time you bring one back, he gives you like a new weird power. And each of these islands are like differently themed. One is at the base of like a active volcano. One is like this sort of very tropical islandy area, but at the center of it, there's this big tentacle monster that will mess you up if you come near it.
Nice.
One is like a maze in a swamp that constantly changes.
Oh.
So you constantly get lost in it. It's cool. Like, and there's all sorts of different main quests, so to speak, at each of these places that you need to complete to get the item in question. Mm. So the big draw of this game is like when you go out at night, that's when the sort of Lovecraftian stuff comes into play, where it plays with like your sanity. So you'll have this eye on top of your, like near the time of day, which opens and starts moving the more stressed you become. And the more you're out at night, the more your stress level goes up. And the higher your stress level, the more you start, like, I would say hallucinating, but the game makes... it wants you to think that you are questioning reality in a certain way. So like you have these instances where like a rock will suddenly appear in front of you and you've sailed these oceans before and you're like, that was never there. That's impossible that that was there.
Yeah.
But there's a rock there, and if you hit it, you will damage your ship.
I know.
If you leave it going longer, you will start seeing like these cyclones in the ocean come towards you and mess you up. There's instances where a flock of red and black birds come and they will steal things from your cargo. So they'll steal fish from your cargo. A ghost shark can appear and just mess you up. A ghost ship can appear and mess you up.
Oh my God. This is quite a list.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, the longer you are out at night, the worse and worse like things can get. And if you choose not to like sleep in between them, your stress level just stays at where it was and will just get progressively worse and worse. I don't think I tried, but I never found an instance where you could get your stress level so high that you just die, you know, like something. Like, but it definitely became a little harder to complete certain quests, especially with the stupid birds that would steal fish. Like they could steal like a whole day's worth of fishing work. And so I didn't want to really be out when they, you know, had the possibility of coming to mess with me. So. Yeah, it kind of like forces you to like, you definitely need to go fishing at night sometimes, but you have to be very careful about how you do it. It's also like very dark at night and very misty, so you can't really see a lot of things. So it just makes your job a little bit harder.
Yeah.
I think that sort of thing is really cool. I do think as the game goes on, it starts to lose its like luster a lot, and you kind of just, it becomes more of an annoyance than anything. Like, it's like I can deal with the nighttime and I can deal with the ghost rocks and the ghost ships, and but it's just annoying and not scary, really. I kind of wish it got spookier in general. So the story is very non-linear in a sense, like very much like a Bloodborne. You get these notes in the ocean that tell you of past events, and you can kind of piece together who the collector is and what he's trying to do. And there's no definitive answer at the end. The ending is kind of weird. So I didn't mind that. Apparently there's a second ending. I didn't know how to trigger it, but I really
fish harder,
curious.
Man.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what the hell that is. But yeah, it's a good game. I wish it leaned more into like its horror stuff, because at the beginning it really seems like it's going to, and then it just kind of doesn't. It just kind of like what you see at the beginning is what it is for most of the game.
Okay.
But I think the whole loop of like fishing, upgrading your ship, moving on to a new island where there's like new fish and new challenges to kind of undertake. I think it's a really, really fun gameplay loop. And it's like 10 hours or so to finish the game.
Okay.
So it doesn't overstay its welcome either. Nice. I played it a lot on Steam Deck. I think it's really nice on like a mobile platform. It is on Switch.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think it's a lot. It also looks really, really nice. It's got good music. It looks beautiful. Yeah. Like during the day when nothing's trying to kill you, it's very much like a Wind Waker sort of experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good. That's Dredge. It's out now.
Nice.
I think it's like $40, which seems a bit hectic to me.
Yeah. It's a sale game.
I don't actually know how much it is on Steam. Let me just double check real quick. Dredge. 450. 450 is fine, actually, yeah. I think. I mean, for a 10-hour game, I think I'm not basing it just on the number of hours, but based on what I liked about it, 450 seems fine. Yeah. I'd be happy paying that for that. So
nice.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Dredge.
Yeah. What have you been keeping up with in the meantime as well?
Are we bouncing to me quickly? Oh my God.
Yeah, and then we'll bounce back.
Back to you. So let me just, that caught me off guard. So I'm just making a little quick time stamp for my own sanity and pulling up some gameplay footage. So I have been playing just a little game. You've heard of a little game called Dead Cells?
Yeah, it's like this roguelike that I think a lot of people like. I don't know.
It's pretty good. Yeah, so yeah. I've been playing Dead Cells, but not just vanilla Dead Cells. I've been playing the Return to Castlevania DLC.
Ooh.
Which,
how is that?
So if you don't know, just to quickly recap, Dead Cells is a roguelite that launched a couple of years ago. Real good. And it has received a lot of DLC over the years, the latest of which ties into Konami's beloved franchise, Castlevania. And it is really good. In terms of the gameplay loop, it doesn't change too much. You know, it's still the base game of Dead Cells. You're running around, collecting cells, getting blueprints for weapons, unlocking them, and then using them to get further. But what the DLC does is adds a whole lot of things from Castlevania. So be that weapons or enemies or even locales from the franchise. Even music, let me tell you, the music in this DLC absolutely slaps.
Oh my God.
It's good.
That's like sold me already.
Yeah, that
like,
alone.
the Symphony of the Night music is so, so good. So a reimagining of that, I'm in.
Yeah. And it's just, I haven't beat the old Count himself. So at the end of the DLC, you know, you're going to fight Dracula because I haven't. I'm stubborn. I haven't lowered the difficulty. I'm playing on where I left off, so I've had to like relearn the game, come to terms with how it feels. But I'll get there. I've made it to, I'd say maybe halfway through a run, and there's just stuff I still need to unlock. I don't know. I know you didn't really vibe with Dead. Well, you like Dead, so you didn't vibe with it as much as I did.
Yeah, I don't know. I really can't pinpoint what it is about it, but I've tried to get into Dead Cells multiple times, and each time I'm just like, I don't know. It just doesn't click with me. I'm like playing, I'm defeating some bosses, and I'm just like, don't want to do another run. I don't know. I've heard it's become a lot easier since launch. They've like tweaked the difficulty.
I think, yeah. So I remember back in the day, it was I don't know if this how true this is, but I think it was a bit negligible. Your upgrades were a bit negligible because while you got stronger, your enemies just sort of ramped up with you. Whereas I think they've sort of rebalanced that and like, no, you know, you're getting more health, you're doing more damage, etc. So you can 100% do like a glass cannon build where, you know, you can like one shot things. And like, to be honest, depending on the sort of build you're going for, you'll probably one shot a lot of things regardless. But there's something about this game, like playing the DLC. So just for context, I haven't touched any of the other DLC. Like I played Dead Cells on launch. I've dipped back in a couple of times over the years just to, you know, get my fill. I don't know how this compares to the other DLCs, but as far as being a suppose, a classic love letter to the Castlevania franchise, it is really good. It's like to the point where I hear the music, I'm like, man, I should replay Symphony of the Night.
Yes.
And there's also a lot of little neat little Easter eggs or, you know, things that maybe only people who have played Castlevania games will pick up on, but they're just really nice to stumble upon. So for mm-hmm. example, I found a room the other day, which is basically, it was the, you know, Symphony of the Night. It's got that save diamond or symbol.
Yes. It's like a casket.
Yeah, almost. I found it and your character says really? Something interesting. You can't do anything with it. But I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, I know what this is referencing.
The writing in Dead Cells has always been kind of witty, like
it's real fun.
The sarcastic nature of the main character is quite funny.
I mean, even there's a story set up where it's like you bump into Richter and he's like, oh hey, I need to take down this dude. Then you bump into Alucard, he's like, oh yeah, we need to take down my father. But it's mm-hmm. it's obviously told in a very witty manner. Yeah. And to your point, when you stumble onto these little side rooms or Easter eggs, like the writing, you can tell the devs had a lot of fun. And what's quite cool is I did some reading. Like Castlevania was a huge inspiration for like base Dead Cells.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. So it's quite cool to see that it's some sort of come full circle where the devs did get that. You know, I don't know who approached you, but there was a conversation with Konami and they said, hey, like, let's do a crossover.
Yeah,
So it's funny because, this isn't a Castlevania game, but it's like, damn, I kind of wish it was. It's really good. It's like roguelike.
You kind of wish it was the Metroidvania as opposed to a roguelike. Yeah. Mm.
It's really good though. Like, I'm still chipping away at it. I put in maybe like 5 to 6 hours. I should just lower the difficulty, get to the end.
Is it a completely separate campaign?
No.
Okay.
I think that's one of the only things that, it's not a criticism against Dead Cells because I get they integrate everything into the base game. But when you start a run, you still start in that same original area, the dungeon, yeah. And then you have to find a set of stairs leading down to this area that you see I'm playing through now, like the ramparts of the castle or, you know, leading to the castle. So it's just like, it would be cool if from the get-go, I could walk out the dungeon, see a door, and it's like, you know, enter for Castlevania specific.
But you have to play a portion of that opening dungeon
even halfway through, like I know part of the way to reach, I haven't quite done it yet, but I know to reach Dracula's castle you have to go through the clock tower, which was an area in the original game itself.
I remember the clock tower. Interesting. That's a strange format. Like I would have expected maybe the opening to be in an original Dead Cells area, but then you go through a door, it's like, cool, now you're in the Castlevania section. Bounce back is kind of strange. Yeah, it
goes back and forth between the two. So, I mean, that's one thing I was like, I'm not a big fan of that. Mm, it would have been cool to just have exclusive, you know, here's Castlevania mode. But that said, the parts that are, you know, part of the DLC are real good. There are some returning enemies, there are some new enemies, obviously. And, of course, there are a load of new weapons from Castlevania, and the ones I've discovered, at least, are really fun to play with. Like, you know, you get the Bible, you get the cross, you get a whip that you can switch between modes. It's like you can have it as a sword and then transition to a whip, which is really cool.
Oh, that's cool. So it's like a combination of Richter and Alucard, essentially. Yeah.
Although I think Alucard's weapon must be here somewhere because every time I see him before I start a run, he's like, has anyone seen my sword? I'm like, okay, it's somewhere.
Get, I don't know if you can play as him or if you get a costume that looks exactly like him.
So you get a load of costumes, and I imagine he would be one of them.
Yeah, like that black and yellow cloak that he wears.
I have seen that there is a mode, which I also haven't figured out how to do, but you can play as Richter. Like, there's a separate mode specifically where you play as him.
Interesting.
Which is quite cool. Yeah, I need to keep digging to figure out how to do that. But yeah, I'm having, look, I love Dead Cells by default. Mm. So just having an excuse to come back and just play and discover new stuff has been really, really nice.
Nice. Yeah. I've been, for some reason, very tempted to play more Castlevania just in general. Like, I know the Steam sale just ended, but I nearly bought like that collection of the old Castlevania games, like the action adventure ones that are really difficult. So
that would be close. Really good on Steam Deck, you know?
I think so too, but I don't know if I have the patience for those. They're like notoriously difficult, like Rondo of Blood and the original Castlevanias. So, but yeah, maybe I should just play Symphony of the Night again, because that's the actual Metroidvania. That was like the Metroidvania one. The others aren't really Metroidvanias. So that,
I would not say no to a remake of Symphony of the Night.
Yeah, that'd be good. But a remake like that still keeps it 2D.
No, 100%.
It being 2D is very important to the structure of that game.
Mm.
But like a complete reimagining of like visually and maybe just expanding on the levels and the combat. Yeah. I'd 100% like Konami make that game, even though they never fucking will, but
make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, Koji Igarashi kind of tried to do that with Bloodstained, which isn't apparently as good, but still kind of like a Symphony of the Night like. So yeah, maybe cool. I should just play that.
Just play it, or just play this. It's basically
listen. I have hovered over the buy button on that game on that expansion. Multiple times already, and
just for the music alone, man, it's really good.
I might actually just do it. Fuck, I don't need to. I've got 70 games to play, but I want to.
Just do it. Cool. That is Castlevania. Well, Return to Castlevania, the Dead Cells DLC / expansion playing.
So keeping with the horror theme, I guess. Keeping with the dead. I finished Dead Cells. Dead Space. God,
you finished?
Yeah, Dead after Space. Finishing Dredge, I was just like, cool, we bought this like Dead Space remake a while back. Haven't really had time to play it. Just gonna jump in. I think it might have had a bigger impact on me had I not replayed the entire trilogy just last year, like last year, Jan. I just got into like playing all of them again, and I played Dead Space 3 for the first time and really kind of enjoyed it. This remake is really good. It is very, very, very faithful to the first game in a way that makes you question your memory of the first game, which is, I found really interesting, because there were a lot of times where I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this. And then I think about it, I'm like, that's impossible that I remember this, because this mechanic didn't exist in the first game. Like that's certain boss fights, certain boss fights in like Zero G were completely different, because, well, in the first game, you didn't have free motion in Zero G. You could just bounce between points. In this one, you have the same 360 degree range of motion as the sequels. So they had to re-engineer a lot of the boss fights, but they're so familiar in a way that it feels like this is how I remember playing them, even though I know for a fact that's not how they actually are. Yeah. Which I think is the beauty of this remake, is it delivers on your completely unrealistic memories of what Dead Space was. I think it just goes to show that the fundamental design elements of a game from 2009, I think it is.
Yeah.
They hold up so strongly today. There was a thread on Twitter of someone making a very good point where they were like, it's interesting that all of the biggest games of this year have been remakes of older games. And it's almost a signal to like the industry or game developers that there is a fundamental style of game that's no longer exists. The quintessential like single player game without any nonsense, without any like overbearing RPG elements. Cause I think a lot of single player games have that now, like, single-player games have to be this mishmash of like
everything,
all these options and upgrades and equipment and this and that. And you've got games like Resident Evil 4 Remake, Dead Space Remake. What was the other one that was remade?
Final Fantasy.
Metroid Prime. Metroid Prime. They're just straightforward, like, this is a single player game. In Dead Space, yes, you upgrade your guns, but it's so limited. It's like, I'm just upgrading a little bit of damage.
It's not like,
exactly,
hey, you unlocked skill points, now you can give Isaac 5% more move speed.
Exactly. It's just like, oh, if you unlock this node, you're going to get 5 points more damage on this gun because you enjoy using this gun, or you're going to get more health, or it's very, very straightforward. And there's a very defined, like, Dead Space is broken up into chapters. Metroid Prime is broken up into, you know, distinct objectives. Resident Evil 4 has its areas, you know. And I think people are craving that sort of structure from the game, from games today. And single-player games have, like, not been that for a very long time. So it was an interesting observation, and I do agree, because, like, playing through Dead Space, I finished it in, like, 10 hours, and I was like, wow, that was good. That was, like, a really not... like tightly paced adventure that went on for as long as it should have. It escalated with the right amount of intensity, and I really, really enjoyed it. This remake does lean more towards like the action-y aspects of it's made the first game far more action heavy than it used to be. And I think that's because they've got this like AI director similar to like Left 4 Dead working in the background that kind of ramps up the intensity dynamically. So sometimes enemies will just fucking appear out of nowhere and you're just like, I was like, not prepared for this. And and where's all my ammo? So I was constantly struggling for ammo, which is how a survival horror should be. But it does feel very overwhelming all the time, which can maybe wear down on you if you're not like ready for that. It looks gorgeous, like really beautiful reimagining of the game. And I think a lot of the modern technology gives it a sort of feel that the original could never capture. Like, it's actually dark, you know, the lighting adds a lot to it. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, the game is the same as it's dismember enemies and
survive,
stay alive. And I think that's just such a potent mechanic. I can't think of a horror game that has done something as smart. Since it kind of makes the last boss a real bummer though, because the last boss is like not action. That the last boss is like, look at all these glowy bits on me, shoot these with like extreme accuracy, like
goes Resident Evil route. It's like aim for the glowy bits.
And it demands like accuracy in a way that the game just doesn't, like, because the enemy is so large and so far away from you, it immediately rules out like half the weapons you have. And it's like, this sucks.
Lame.
Because what if I got here with very little ammo for the weapons that I do need, you know? That last boss, it was bad in the original. It's bad in the remake still. It's like, so I guess it's faithful. It's just a bad boss fight.
I do think my two cents, because I do want to get to the game at some point when I'm done with my own backlog. But I think this is also an interesting game because I'd argue it almost set the precedent or was a good foundation for modern day games that have very clean or non-existent UIs.
Yes, absolutely.
Even like, if you don't know, in Dead Space, there's no HUD really. It's everything happens on screen. So like your health bar is on the back of your suit, which is like such a small touch, but it's so clever. Like
your ammo counter only appears when you're aiming down the sight.
Yeah, like adds to that immersion. And I think a lot of modern day games, it is like, if there's a HUD, you immediately like, oof. Like, how do I put this off? Or how do I make it less overbearing? I think Dead Space
A lot of games learned the wrong lessons from that.
I know.
They were like, let's just remove the HUD.
And you're like, I don't know what's going on.
Exactly. It's like, no, I don't have all the info I need right now. Like, Dead Space is minimalist without impacting the player. Like, it's very, very smart. Like, only seeing your ammo when you aim down the sights is smart, because it's like, you're constantly kept unaware of what you have. But it's very easy to see it at a glance. Like, your health is always on screen. There's that little bar that shows your stasis meter as well, always on screen. I agree. But then you get some... There were a lot of games that came out after that were like, oh, yeah, this is how HUDs work now. And it's like, you are not surfacing the information in a clear way. You know, like, Isaac's health is clear because his suit is brown and black and his health is blue. Like, it's very easy to tell what is there. But then some other games are like, yeah, the suit is blue and your health is blue. And it's like, I don't know what the fuck's going on here. So yeah, there's a lot of accessibility options because I assume, I don't know for a fact, but I assume at the time the original didn't really have that. So people with
difficulty with
colorblind options and stuff, that's all here now. So I guess it's a far more accessible way to play Dead Space as well. And I recall seeing a lot of talk of that when the game released. It was like, oh, I can finally play Dead Space now because it's got X, Y, and Z. So that's great.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a great game, and I fully expect them to remake the other two now. I think two is the one that needs least work because that game is just
good.
I would say near perfect start to finish. It is just a phenomenal fucking game. The third one is the one that needs a lot of work, and I'd be curious to see what they do there. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I can't wait for you to play it because I think. Having not played the original in a long time are going to have a great time with it.
Very little memory of the original, so it's going to feel like a brand new game. And funny enough, Resident Evil 4 Remake is going to be the same thing where I played the original a long time ago. So it's going to be difficult to tell the difference between like, this is a new thing or no, this was, you know, something from the original game reimagined.
Can I tell you a secret? Never finished Resident Evil 4. Never finished it. Furthest I got was the castle with the weird, creepy Napoleon dude. But
Resident Evil 4 is a deceivingly long game, actually. For a single-player game, it's actually very, very long. Not a bad
thing. And I've heard this remake is long. Yeah. Like, it can take anywhere from 15 to 20 hours. I'm like, that's a lot of Resident Evil. Considering 3, I finished in 4 hours. Like
that. Yeah, not ready. Resident Evil 4 is so good.
Yeah, I'm keen. I try to play it. I just try to play it like so long after the fact that it just felt bad. Like by the time I was playing it, that control scheme was so weird. I've played that opening village section multiple 400 times. Very fun. Yeah, so good.
Tune back in next week when we'll both have thoughts on it, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. Mm.
Cool. Games out. Let's keep the show moving. We're running out of time.
BG 24/7 video games releasing. I think we've like passed a really big point of releases now. I think it like kind of slows down slightly.
There's nothing big until like the end of April.
So we're looking at games from today, March 25th, up until I would say like March 30th, March 31st.
So two things.
Yeah. Okay, I'm not going to talk about the Diablo 4 open beta because by the time you're listening to this, it's done. So
it's done, dude.
9 Years of Shadow, PC, March 27th. Death Roads Tournament, Steam Early Access, March 28th. Okay. Crime Boss, Rocket City. That's that like Payday looking thing with all the actors. Apparent. There were previews for that like earlier this month and it was... I've never seen previews so negative. Like, you know where previews are like... It's okay.
Sorry, did these you say this is like Grand Theft Auto E-ish?
No, it's like a Payday.
Oh, Payday,
like
sorry.
Four player like PvE sort of thing. Yeah, nice. I don't know. Drop coming to PC March 28th. MLB The Show 23. That's PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch March 28th. It's also on Game Pass. Super weird.
Nice.
The Last of Us Part 1 coming to PC on March 28th. Nice. That's pretty cool for everyone on PC.
The timing of that show's wrapped up. It's a whole audience of PC
players. You can just
relive
your trauma.
Nice.
Raidborn, Steam Early Access and PC, March 29th. Gripper. PC is Switch, March 29th. Pirates Outlaws. PS4, so Xbox One and Switch. That's weird.
Yeah.
March 29th. This is a cool one for me and maybe me alone. Forza 5. Rally Adventure Expansion.
My friend and colleague Brad loves Forza.
Oh, I love Forza. Forza 5, I think, is one of the best ones. And the Hot Wheels expansion before this was really good. So I have high expectations for this rally. I'm not huge into the off-road portions of the game. So
I love Rally. See. It's a good time.
That's coming to PC, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X and S March 29th. That's not on Game Pass, obviously. Expansions don't form part of that. Total Tank Generals, PC, March 30th. Ravenbound, PC, March 30th. The Last Worker coming to, wow, PC, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, PSVR, PSVR 2,
oh my
Quest
God, everything.
Wow. March sure. 30th. Mayhem in a Single Valley, PS4 and PS5, March 30th. The Great War, Western Front, PC, March 30th. And Anya Roth? I don't know. Anya Roth, The Queen's Tyranny, PC and Switch, March 30th. Dredge. Oh, Dredge isn't out. My bad. Sorry. Dredge. PC, PS4, PC, PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch, March 30th. So it's out this coming week. Nice. My bad. Saga of Sins, PC, PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch, March 30th. Plasma, Steam Early Access, March 30th. And then Fitness Boxing, Fist of the North Star. So Fitness Boxing based on anime?
This is a must-play game.
Switch, coming March. Wow, Darren needs to play this.
Cool.
Yeah, that's basically it for March. That's your March wrapped up.
Nice. Now, to news. What should we start with here? So much news.
I think the biggest talk of the week, Counter-Strike is getting a fucking sequel.
Who knew? Oh my goodness.
What in the world? Talk me through this.
I think I could be wrong. Maybe I'm getting my timeline and my information wrong, but I think this was rumored or supposedly leaked.
Like earlier this month, there was someone saying, Counter-Strike 2 is happening.
Right. It was like an insider or someone saying like, no, Counter-Strike 2 is real. It's coming.
But even
like
then, it wasn't clear if it was Counter-Strike 2.
Oh, yeah, it was just
something. There was debates on whether it was like, oh, they might just call it Counter-Strike and move it to Source Engine 2. Source 2. But they've literally gone and, no, this Counter-Strike 2.
It's Counter-Strike 2.
Despite being the fifth game in the series?
I think...
What is it? Counter-Strike 1.6, Source...
Then Global Offensive. Yeah,
so, I swear there was one
There is an in-between one. It was like a single player, Condition Zero.
Condition Zero, that's the
one. There's like an in-betweener somewhere. I don't know.
Guess what? They all have Dust 2.
we'll get to it. But yeah, Counter-Strike 2, as we said, is a sequel. It is, as far as I understand, a free upgrade if you own... I mean, Counter-Strike's free to play, but you generally can pay cash to have it sort of separates the free to play and, you know, I'm getting my words jumbled here. When you play Counter-Strike, okay, when you do matchmaking, you can choose to filter games by like a complete free to play player base or like premium player base. Those are people who have, quote unquote, bought the game. And I think the idea is that, you know, Counter-Strike is a competitive shooter, so there's obviously a lot of talk about hacking. So, you know, what's your...
They expect if you paid for the game, you don't hack?
No, well, it's more thing of if you're a hacker and you get banned, you're not just going to, like, keep buying the game. You know, if it's free to play, you can just make a new account, no problem.
That makes sense.
So if you got Counter-Strike, you'll get a free upgrade to Counter-Strike 2 when it does eventually launch. The game obviously will be very similar to its foundation because it's Counter-Strike. You don't want to mess too much with the mechanics and such. But I think the most drastic changes are coming in the form of some gameplay things and most notably maps and visuals. It's like one of the biggest things that comes to mind, for example, is that smoke grenades now. I think because of the ports of the new engine, they can do actual smoke physics or whatever. So it's quite cool.
Yes, I did see the video on that. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, so what's quite cool is that if somebody smokes an area, you can actually shoot the smoke away, which is...
Yes, yeah.
Like, what an interesting little gameplay thing.
I saw in the video, it was like one player shot the smoke and the other player had like an AWP ready and was ready to like take out anyone behind the smoke.
Which is like it's a subtle thing, but in terms, you know, again, competitive shooter.
Smoke also fills spaces now. So if you chuck it into like a pipe... or like that like underground pipe thing, it will fill that pipe and not like bleed out of it, like so you can't, I guess it will fuck with people because some people are like, oh, if I throw smoke into this corner, it's going to bleed into the other room as well and like obscure vision there. Now it's like not going
to
do that.
I'm quite keen to play around and see, you know, how it's actually implemented or what the applications are in game. But to go back to Dust 2, there was a blog post or video that spoke about how maps are being changed. And there are three tiers. It's like you know, some maps are getting completely overworked. Not overworked, reworked. Some maps are getting like subtle changes, whatever. And some maps are being like untouched. And you best believe Dust 2 is not being touched.
Hell yes. It's the fucking classic.
And I'd argue that Dust 2 is like one of the most balanced maps like in gaming by default. So it's quite cool that they acknowledge that. They're like, we're not going to mess with it. You know, you can enjoy Counter-Strike 2's new physics and whatever, but the vanilla map is still there. And they do say that there's still a lot more to come. So I don't know what that means. Like, are there new weapons? Are there new... I mean, I'm sure there will be new maps, but in terms of what that content is, I don't know. But I think this game is like officially launching... Summer,
which is like soon.
2 months, 3 months away. So there's a limited playtest happening.
This week, isn't it?
Yeah, so if you play Counter-Strike, you might have an invite. I know they said it. There's a lot of factors are going to dictating who gets access. So like, have you played recently? What your hours are? What's your Steam status? Like, do you have a good track record? Which you might have one, so good luck.
I'm curious now, like, because of all these mechanic changes, do you think this is a good time for someone to jump into Counter-Strike?
Yeah, I mean, I think Counter-Strike has always been a great... I mean, there's a reason it's been around for, like, what, 2 decades
Sure,
now,
so long, yeah.
Because the actual gameplay loop is just really, really good and smart, like... If you don't know what Counter-Strike is, it's basically terrorists versus counter-terrorists. You get
round-based.
Terrorists have to plant a bomb. Counter-terrorists have to defend a bomb site or defuse the bomb to win the round. And getting kills or winning the round nets you money. And that's what you use to buy things like armor and grenades and weapons. And it's just such a good gameplay formula. It's easy to understand and like the classic thing, difficult to master. But I think if you wrap your head around Counter-Strike and you learn the fundamentals, like it's still one of my favorite games of all time. I mean, I've played it through all these iterations you touched on earlier, and I'm definitely going to try Counter-Strike 2 when it comes out.
I think it's just daunting for some because it is like the shooting model is quite unforgiving. Like
it is.
I mean, you watch any Counter-Strike player, they're like crouching when they shoot.
Yeah, this isn't a Call of Duty, and you're right. It's a thing of you need to break a lot of muscle memory of a modern day shooter because Counter-Strike is a lesson in when you see someone, you need to stop and shoot.
Yeah, moving and shooting is not a thing you often do.
Yeah. But if you can wrap your head around that, it's also one of the more gratifying games. Like nailing headshots or winning rounds can be some good stuff. So I'm keen for the sequel.
Nice.
So that's coming. So
that is coming. What else? Okay, here's your weekly Blizzard Microsoft Activision check-in, but it's kind of a big one. There's obviously three big hurdles for Microsoft to cross with this deal. It is the FTC, which is the American Competition Commission. The CMA, which is the UK, the Competition something authority, and then the EU, which is the EU.
Damn. Full stop.
There was always this idea that the CMA was the biggest hurdle.
Yeah.
Like the CMA was always going to be Microsoft's biggest one, and if they managed to get past the UK, the FTC likely didn't have like a case to stand on, and the same for the EU. So... the UK's Competition and Markets Authority has reached a provisional conclusion, this is according to Eurogamer, that Microsoft's bid to take over Activision Blizzard will, quote, not result in a substantial lessening of competition in relation to console gaming in the UK. Now that's huge. They've basically just ruled that should Microsoft acquire Activision Blizzard, they do not foresee it tipping the scales too much in Microsoft's favor for anti-competition. Which is basically them saying they approve of this deal with respect to the new evidence of Microsoft's incentives to make Activision games available everywhere. Mm. So they are still somewhat... So The CMA's amendment to its provisional findings relates only to console competition and not cloud gaming services, while it continues to carefully consider the responses provided. So this would indicate why Microsoft has been so aggressive with making deals with cloud providers, because basically this is the CMA saying, we think on the console front, you're good, but on the cloud gaming front, we still are not entirely certain that you might not have a monopoly there. And that makes a bit more sense because PlayStation's role in cloud gaming is far less than it is in the console gaming market. So I think that's why Microsoft is hitting up every cloud platform under the sun, making them these 10-year deals.
Yeah.
So the final, this is a preliminary decision. The final decision takes place on April 26th. The EU is meant to give its findings, I think, early May. But basically, an analyst who spoke to Eurogamer says that this swings the pendulum back in favor of the deal completing, which, according to analysts, has always been the case. They've never kind of said that this deal was kind of done. Piers Harding Rolls from MP Analysis says, my long-term view of this deal has always been that it would be complete, but with further concessions from Microsoft to smooth the process. However, the provisional phase two findings of the CMA did give me pause for thought, considering the structural remedies proposed. Remember, those were the proposition that the CMA gave was that Microsoft sell off Call of Duty. Like, that was their solution. And everyone was like, what? If that is your if that is your remedy, then this deal is not going through. Like, says today's updated findings swings the pendulum back in favor of the deal completing. Importantly, the change in stance on lessening of competition in the UK console market means that the requirement for structural remedies are substantially less relevant, in my view. It now just remains to be seen how Microsoft and the CMA deal with the concern around cloud gaming services. So yeah, the FTC obviously is trying to take Microsoft to court later this year over this deal. But if by that point the CMA and the EU have ruled in favor of Microsoft, I think once the CMA and the EU rule in favor, Microsoft will just close the deal.
Yeah.
Like, they won't even give a shit about the FTC. They'll be like, we'll see you in court, whatever, but we're closing this deal. And you can try and sue us after the fact. And I don't think the FTC is going to. So, I mean, when the FTC brought forward their court case, analysts and lawyers there were already like, this is a very weak case. And this was before any of this happened. So,
good luck.
Yeah, I think this is now like within the next 3 months, this deal's done. By June. I think Microsoft would love that. Could you imagine this deal closes just before the E3 showcase? That would be big.
Yeah, because you
and
you
I think
could,
they would
could,
love that.
You could literally then at E3 just be like, oh, hey.
Diablo yeah, Blizzard 4, Games coming this, to Game Pass.
That,
yeah,
this, all
exactly.
on Game Pass.
like there was that news story where Rod Ferguson said, oh, there are no plans to bring Diablo 4 to Game Pass. And it's like, well, yeah, fucking course he's going to say that. Like,
until the deal's through.
There's no way they can say yes or no to that until the deal's done, because that will just show, like, that would also just put like pressure on Microsoft being like, see, they're putting all these games on Game Pass. See?
Yeah.
I just do wonder what this means for Sony now, who have apparently rejected so many deals for Call of Duty that Microsoft had just stopped speaking to them.
That is hilarious.
I think last week there was a report that said that there's no ongoing communication between PlayStation and Sony with regards to a Call of Duty deal. And now the UK has just ruled in favor of Microsoft. Like, what is Jim Ryan thinking?
I don't know. PlayStation this generation have been disappointing.
They genuinely might have fucked something up here. Like, I don't think they're going to pull Call of Duty from PlayStation ever, because it makes no financial sense for them to do so. But they could have maybe signed a 10-year deal that could have given them some sort of assurance to have it on like PlayStation Plus or, you know, and now they don't have that. And now there's no reason for Microsoft to offer it either.
Even on that, I'm like, it wouldn't. Look, obviously, Microsoft would make more money if people, you know, paid and bought the game. But reality is, Call of Duty has a lot of microtransactions, which will print their money.
It's just the
thing of making sure as many people as possible are playing it. So if you give it away on every bloody platform, who cares? You're going to get people buying Battle Pass. I mean, look at Warzone alone. I'm sure that makes a mint of money. So yeah. Sorry, Sony. I don't know what they're doing this generation, but it's been weird to watch as like a don't turn in like as a predominantly Sony fan. It's just wild.
Yeah, I don't think we're alone in saying that this Sony feels a lot more like the PS3 Sony as opposed to the resurgent, very consumer focused PS4 Sony.
Well, as,
I just don't see them like
someone,
that anymore.
Yeah, as someone who works on Xbox, though, I'm loving seeing all the good stuff Microsoft's doing.
Microsoft is firing on all cylinders now. Mm. I just do agree that this is now cool. You've done all this. You've bought all these. The big games need to start coming. Yeah, they need
this is
to start
the E3.
Hitting.
Like, so yeah, what year we are now? Like, this is the year. This is the one.
They need to start coming out, and they need to start being big games.
I do think, though, all that said and done, this is in fact the year. Well, I sincerely hope so. We'll see.
Fucking hope so. There's so many things, and we cannot go to another E3 of like no shows from games we've seen and just announcements for new games, and it's just like, okay, well, what are we playing this December?
Yeah.
Like, Phil Spencer already acknowledged last year was bad for them.
Like, yeah, they had like nothing
release wise. Mm. So they really need to figure things out this year.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's fly through the rest of the news. Should we tick off?
Let's just stick with Xbox real quick. Xbox is hoping to launch a mobile game store as early as next year. Phil Spencer says the Activision Blizzard deal is critically important to the strategy. So Phil Spencer says that Microsoft is likely to launch an Xbox-branded mobile gaming app on both Android and iOS. And this is mostly possible because of the Digital Markets Act, which allows both Google and Apple... disallows Google and Apple from barring this sort of thing on their platforms. You know, previously all apps had to go through the App Store or... You know, all apps, you couldn't have your own app marketplace on iPhone that didn't link up through the iStore or the App Store. So that is coming into effect in March 2024. So I suspect you'll see this app soon after that. Phil Spencer did suggest that Microsoft would be able to spin up such a store pretty quickly once the rules allow it. The company already publishes Xbox and Game Pass apps that would be pretty trivial to adapt into storefronts, Spencer said. So, nice. Yeah, I mean, the Activision Blizzard acquisition is big for this because this is where all the King games would live.
Yeah.
Probably. And so you would have stuff like Candy Crush, Call of Duty Mobile, and Diablo Immortal underneath that sort of umbrella. So, yeah.
That is some big mola. Some of those games alone. Cool. Let's bounce. Let's just tick these off quickly. So Resident Evil 4 Remake is out this week. If you're all enjoying it, it seems so because it has set a concurrent franchise record on Steam. It reached 140,000 concurrent users as of time of this being published. And the numbers, maybe by the time you read this, the numbers will be bigger.
Who knows?
But good on Resident Evil 4 Remake. Also, on that, I don't know if this was known prior to this.
No, this was just like out of nowhere announced. Yeah.
So, if you don't know, Resident Evil as a franchise, since I think the very first Resident Evil 3 has always had a mercenaries mode or, you know, a little optional extra for you to dig into after you've rolled credits.
And play as Tofu in Resident Evil 2. Great.
And Resident Evil 4 Remake is, in fact, getting a Mercenaries mode, which will release on April 7.
That's pretty cool. I've enjoyed the Mercenary modes in the remakes. Not so much the... Like, RE8 got a Mercenaries mode. Didn't really enjoy that. I just don't think that first-person mode is not ideal for that sort of thing.
I think the last Mercenaries mode I really sank my teeth into was Revelations 1 on the 3DS at the time and Revelations 2. Like, I put a lot of time into both. Like, I'd say probably more time than I actually spent playing the campaign. It's good fun.
Yeah.
So I think Resident Evil 4, perfect playground for this. So very, very happy to see that it's being added. Although you'll have to wait like 2 weeks, God forbid. Shall we bounce to the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle graphic novel, The Lowest Ronin, will become a Dark God of All style video game? What is
this sounds on? Super cool. Sorry, I'm just dealing with a feline here.
Oh my god, that cat.
This sounds really cool. Like, I'm not familiar with this comic at all, but I did some reading on it afterwards, and it seems to be, it's a fairly recent comic. Which is set in the future where there's only one Turtle left. Yeah, so The Last Ronin tells a markedly different Turtles tale from usual, set in a grim future where three of the four superhero turtles is dead, along with Master Splinter. The remaining turtle, whose identity is only revealed at the end of the book, acts as a lone Avenger taking down the Foot Clan across New York. So that sounds like, oh my God, Kat. That sounds like a really great setup for a single player, third person action adventure game.
And I assume
that sounds cool. Yeah,
you'd bounce between those four sets of weapons because you don't know.
Yeah,
who the,
I guess so. Because otherwise, it'd be very obvious who you're playing as.
Yeah,
so.
This screenshot. It looks like there's a sword, a staff,
and a stick.
I mean, if you want to really get deep,
you've got
into
Raphael's
it, the bottom,
forks.
Yeah, it seems there's a fork poking out there.
I don't know what those things are fucking called. the ninja forks.
Uses it to fight crime and eat his food.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, that's cool. The game is reportedly several years from release and its developer is currently being kept a secret, which is strange.
Interesting.
Yeah, but that's coming. That's cool. Could you imagine? Oh my goodness.
My goodness.
That's pretty cool. I'm keen on that. That's like a different take on Turtles and citing God of War as an influence probably for the combat perspective is pretty neat, I think. What else? Oh, Lego 2K Drive is a new Lego game that looks like Lego Forza Horizon got a game, essentially.
I mean, Forza Horizon.
So Polygon calls it. Yeah, they had multiple expansions with Lego that were like phenomenal. They're really, really good. There were a lot of hands-on previews accompanying the announcement of this game. It basically seems like the races play out almost like a Mario Kart. You've got like power-ups in the races that can do all sorts of things. And you've got different terrain types that your car shifts between automatically. So you know how like in Mario Kart, when you got to like a zero gravity section, your car's tires would like whoop and they would just like... So the Lego thing does that. Like if you hit a ramp and go into water, it will like into like a boat. And then...
That's cool.
Like transform back into an off-road thing and... Yeah, but then it's got the open world structure between races of a Forza Horizon, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
This game's out soon. It's out in like May.
My goodness.
I'm fucking keen for this. This looks great.
It looks cool.
That little mini map in the bottom left looks identical to the one in Forza Horizon.
It does.
To the point where you could mistake this game for that.
It's a Forza expansion. Let's just call it a spade.
Am I the only one who hates that 2K likes putting their fucking name in the name of games?
I hate it so much.
Like, Lego 2K Drive. Just call it Lego Drive.
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck cares? Like, I hate it so much.
If you're going to be that person, put it at the front of the game. 2K Lego
2K
Drive.
2K is That's Lego cool. Drive, yeah.
Yeah.
Not just like Lego 2K Drive. Like, what?
No. Because my first thought is like, what is this? 2K resolution?
Can you imagine the sequel? Lego 2K Drive 2.
And now we've set off the path of Fast Too Furious. That's cool.
Oh my God.
And then last.
Yeah, but that's cool. I'm keen on it.
It looks very cool. And then last two pieces of news. Ubisoft. Ubisoft is testing an AI tool that writes NPC dialogue. I laugh because Jeff made a comment in the Discord this week saying it'll be, what did he say? I don't remember his exact words, but it made me laugh. It's like, it'll be better or worse than what exists.
Oh, no, that was me.
Was
I
that
was
you?
Like, yeah, that was me. I was like, you can't convince me it isn't robots writing some of this dialogue
already.
Yes. Like, come on. That's great. I'm not trying to be disparaging or mean to writers at Ubisoft, but they've probably been given a job and they have to do it. But whatever job they're given, a lot of that writing in the NPC realm and the like description realm is just so fucking robotic and boring, and especially in a lot of their most recent releases. So yeah, maybe this will be an improvement. Who knows?
Mm.
I think people get very, 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 very scared when they see things like this and don't really realize what it actually means. For example, I use AI on my day-to-day job all the time. Guess what? It's made my life a lot easier. Because like I have an AI that can predict code that I still have to look over and make sure it does what I need it to do, but it saves me having to type it all out.
Yeah.
You know? And it, nine times out of 10, predicts things pretty well. It's not making me lazier. It's just making me more efficient.
No, but I think that's what the discourse should be. It's not a thing of like, oh no, AI is coming to steal our jobs. It's like, no, AI will just make our lives easier.
It should just enhance like, your jobs.
Remember when you used to have to write things by hand and then Microsoft Word came along? I don't know. Was the discourse there like, oh no, Penn's days are doomed.
I imagine when computers release, they're like, they're coming to take typewriters' jobs. No. Yeah. Listen, I think there are definitely ways where AI can be used nefariously to try and replace writers. I mean, it's happened at like CNET where they're like, oh, we got AI to write these articles. We don't need writers anymore. That's shit. But it was very clearly shit because a lot of those articles were bad and wrong. So like, I think used in the correct ways, you can definitely enhance the quality of something using AI. But at the same time, do I trust Ubisoft to do that? Maybe not. We'll see.
And then last
one.
EA is pulling Battlefield Bad Company games and 1943 from stores. So if you don't own these games...
This originally included Mirror's Edge and people were like, why?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, what is it in Mirror's Edge that you need to take offline? Like,
Because that's no multiplayer. So you're not paying for servers or...
Exactly. I mean, this is still shit because this, again, just flies in the face of preservation. These are games that weren't even digital only. They weren't part of the digital future. They're just like, well, they can also just stop printing game discs. So
Bad Company 2 is one of my favorite Battlefields. Of a game. What a great game. Like
that game, probably the best Battlefield campaign ever. Mm. Like...
And the multiplayer, man, that jungle warfare, I put a lot of time into that. It was a lot of fun.
I only found out this week, I probably knew it at some point, but reminded of it, that Battlefield Bad Company never came to PC. It was a console exclusive.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, the very first Bad Company is not on PC.
That is wild.
Which is a bummer because I immediately went and looked. I'm like, I should buy these games, especially Bad Company 2, just to keep.
Yeah.
And then I saw it was 400 rand on Steam, and I was like, are you fucking nuts?
Like, actually, I don't need to preserve this game.
Yeah, I'm good. You can preserve it in your capitalist hell. Fuck that. And then I kept looking for Bad Company, and I'm like, I can't find it. Did they not bring it to Steam? So I Googled it, and it's like, nah, it's just not on PC at all.
That's crazy.
So I really like those two games. So it's sad. These games will... the single player components will remain playable. Obviously Battlefield 1943 is digital only and multiplayer only for PlayStation 4 consoles, so that's dead. They're being pulled from stores in April, so you have a couple of days to go and April 28th, so you've got like a month to go and buy them.
Nice. Cool. And that's it. That's gaming news this week.
That's gaming news this week.
But also probably the episode, because if you look at the time, we're going to ship you off. So I think, unfortunately, we are going to skip the few questions we had this week. We will bank them
for
next week.
We will roll them over till next week. Yeah, we won't completely omit them.
Yeah. We've had some technical difficulties, which hopefully you won't notice, which has delayed an already tight recording.
I couldn't believe it. Like, on the day where we literally didn't have time. We had like two massive technical issues that we've never had before.
Yeah.
Like in the middle of the fucking episode. Like, can you believe it?
Yes.
Good thing is, if you're listening to this and you don't know what I'm talking about, that means we did a good job
If you're a video viewer, you might notice a random transition here and there. Just pretend, just blink. Like, oh, I don't know what happened. It's fine.
Oh, that sounded slightly
weird.
I
will say quickly that I figured out, I didn't figure out. I've just finally started doing it. If you listen on Spotify, you can now submit your questions directly on the platform because every week.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Every week I will put a little question up there. Do you have any questions for our next show? And you can reply directly through the app. And if I'm feeling generous, maybe I'll add a poll too. Like, does Alessandro, is he bad at games? You can say yes or no.
I mean, you can add two options there, yes and yes.
Oh, yes and definitely. Yeah, but so if you're a Spotify listener, do look out for those little extra touches because I will try. The question will be a standard, but there might be some polls here and there if I'm feeling festive.
Additionally, just a reminder to look out for the links for the Gigabyte competition the competition we're running with Gigabyte. It will be in the podcast description. which, you know, you may or may not see depending on what podcast platform you're using, but it's definitely in the YouTube one. And if you still can't find it, it will be on our social channels.
Yeah.
It'll be, we'll make it a pinned tweet or whatever, just for the duration of the competition. So yeah, that's cool. Enter it if you're really keen on it. And it'll be running for the next 2 weeks. So yeah, again, thanks to Gigabyte for sponsoring that competition. And we hope one of you get to win this lovely, lovely AIO 240ml water cooler. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Cool.
Aorus.
Aorus. That's episode.
That has been episode 218 of Checkpoint Chat. We will be back next week for more games, more Resident Evil, and definitely more user questions.
Yes.
But until then, have a delicious week. Have a great one.
Tasty.
And we will see you next time. Cool. Okay, bye.
Goodbye.